getting sober requires a lot more than mind over matter, a lot more than willpower. It's about leveraging the support around you. People in recovery typically need a mix of medical help, emotional support, and changes in lifestyle to manage their addiction, not just mental determination. As both a therapist and someone embracing the recovery lifestyle, there's one tool I always recommend to people needing extra accountability: SoberLink. SoberLink is a high-tech breath analyzer system designed to help you get and stay sober. And here's why I love it. You'll test the same day every day, eliminating testing anxiety. Friends and family receive instant test results, helping you rebuild trust and preventing relapse. Accountability is a part of that, and it's something to really be embraced. Devices have built-in facial recognition, so your support circle knows you're testing, and tamper-resistant sensors flag any attempts at trying to beat the system, so your sobriety is never questioned. So let 2024 be your best year yet. Visit soberlink.com/TAM to sign up and receive $50 off your device. That's soberlink.com/TAM. And let accountability be your guide. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. My name is Dwayne Osterlund, and I'm your host, and we are on to another episode. Our guest today is Eric Fisher. He is author of the upcoming book, The Martial Art of Recovery: Self-Mastery Practices to Subdue Addiction and Achieve Mental Wellness. Eric Fisher is a Canadian certified counselor living in Calgary, Alberta. He has worked in the mental health and addiction field for over 13 years, having worked in both inpatient and outpatient treatment environments, and currently has his own private practice, Recovery Arts Counseling, where he specializes in addiction and trauma. And on today's episode, we're going to talk about his passion about the intersection between martial arts concepts like balance, self-discipline, awareness, and respect with addiction and mental health treatment. Eric's going to discuss his own journey with martial arts and how it helped him learn to thrive in his own life and how it helped him overcome his obstacles in his life. I really enjoyed talking with Eric about these concepts and using these ideas that take place in martial arts and applying them to our own mental wellness and being able to use those metaphors to move forward in your life. I think you'll get a lot out of this episode. I really enjoyed talking to Eric and connecting with his passion around this subject. And if you're getting a lot out of the Addicted Mind podcast, please rate and review us in iTunes or whatever podcast app you use. It really does help the podcast get found. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for everyone who has done that. And you can continue the conversation online by joining our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook, type in the Addicted Mind podcast, and click join. All right, everyone, stay tuned for this episode. All right, everyone, welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. We've got a great guest today, Eric Fisher, and we're going to talk about how martial arts and mental health mix together and how those can be used as tools in your recovery. But first, Eric, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you and how you got into this work and why you're passionate about doing this.
Hello, everyone. My name's Eric. Yeah, and I'm from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, but not originally. I'm originally from Tennessee. I'm a Canadian certified counselor, and it's just amazing to see the transformations in people working in this field. And that's one of the main draws to this work. And also just the amount I've learned about myself through the work as well is a driving force as well, albeit it can be uncomfortable. So that's,
yeah,
that's a piece.
Yes,
for
that
me.
Is true. Definitely. All right. So tell us a little bit about how you started to mix these two things together and getting into counseling. You were called to this work, and why addiction treatment?
When I first started the work, I had zero to little knowledge about addiction. Like, I didn't even have a course in my master's on addiction. And I was thrust into this treatment facility in Mississippi where I was working professionally. And I knew very little. I was given like 3 intakes, a session, a psychoeducation class to do, and I was sink or swim, overloaded. Am I going to be able to do this work? And from that time, I've grown so much with my knowledge. And in the last 2.5 years, I've been, well, starting 2.5 years ago, I started to look at the martial arts piece, because that's what I have a background in, with 2 different martial arts forms. I did Wado Ryu when I was like 10 to 12, and American Kempo when I was 16 to 18, which I know a lot more about. And I started to make these connections, because I knew that there had to be some type of connection between the two, because there's so many overlapping concepts, whether that's self-respect, balance, self-control, all these different concepts. And so I started to make these connections based on the experience I have had with the work, which has been from the ground up for sure, and lots of personal learning as well myself.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your journey getting into this field with mental health and kind of being thrown into a treatment facility. That can be pretty overwhelming. I know when I started this work, although I had some personal experience with it, it's overwhelming to go in there and, you know, how do I help these individuals that are really, really struggling?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was working, doing outpatient work as what's called a mobile therapist. So I would go to people's homes and do counseling sessions with them 3 days out of the week. And the other 2 days I was in a outpatient clinic. I was not billing enough Medicaid based on my performance. And so I was brought into the director's office and said, either you're going to get fired or you're going to get another position. I was like, well, I want to continue to work. So what can I do? And my supportive supervisor was able to say, hey, there's an opening here at what's called the CDC, not the Center for Disease and Control, but the Chemical Dependency Complex. I was like, yeah, sure. I don't know much about that, but I'm willing to give it a shot. And that's how I was able to be brought in and learning very much on the job. And I've learned so much after coming to Canada, especially.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I bet. I bet. Yeah. And being able to have that experience, you know, being able to do that and being able to work with people, you start to see these patterns, see these things that start to emerge and be able to bring your strengths to it. So yeah. let's start to talk about bringing martial arts into addiction treatment and a little bit like why that was and how did you see the work come together?
The martial arts for me is not just, you know, the techniques and the moves and stances. That's a part of it. But for me, it's a way of looking at life. And so when it comes to even perception, when it comes to even spatial surroundings, like talking about self-respect and all of those. And so I looked back and I remembered all those different pieces that I learned about myself and those different experiences, which were really impactful because I was an adolescent for a big bulk of that. And I was able to start, as I mentioned, you know, making these connections. And so in the book that is releasing soon in May, there's 98 different concepts, different terms that correspond with addiction and mental health treatment, with martial arts, with Kempo. And so I was able to start to translate these different concepts, such as anchors, like an anchor in martial arts is, or I'm able to maybe do an inward block and my anchor is like the lower part of my arm, but the block. But there's also anchors in recovery or in mental health, such as social relationships. And so I was able to make these different connections that way. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So how did martial arts in your own life impact you when, you know, you said you were doing a lot of this when you were younger? How did it play out for you to be able to take that experience and then translate it to working with clients?
I learned a lot about myself as far as where I am on like passive, assertive, aggressive. For me, if I was sparring, I was quite passive. And it took a lot for me to come to a place where I found that zone of assertiveness. Like I had to be pushed. And so when it comes to even working with people, especially with like assertiveness, it's being able to empathize with them, at least on that level, that yeah, it takes some work. If I'm very passive, especially coming into treatment, I can empathize because it's kind of like a fight within myself in a way to get out of my own way. Same thing with martial arts for me. Oftentimes it went from passive to aggressive very quickly when it came to the sparring and learning that way. So I had to learn what's the middle ground. And also when it comes to self-control, that's a big piece I bring into the counseling as well that I learned about with myself. Also the concept of balance as well, being able to understand that body weight perspective of martial arts, different stances, having proper form, and that even influences how I approach people is in counseling, therapy, is talking about balance and like restricting, binging, and trying to find the balance between those two, whether it's restricting on spirituality or binging on spirituality, or the balance between being and doing.
As you're talking, it makes me think about the mixing of the physical world, you know, the physical manifestation of how we are in the world, like you say, balance. And then the, if you want to call it the spiritual, emotional world, and how those two come together, and using those two pieces to highlight how we are in the world, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Like there is a gentleman, Abraham Twersky, you might have heard of him before. He wrote the book Addictive Thinking. He's got some videos on YouTube, and he talked about spirituality, other words being called like freedom or humanity. And freedom, we could look at the balance with spirituality and the physical aspects of ourselves as far as freedom, the spiritual piece of freedom, but also freedom with my body, as far as mobility, as far as movement, as far as exercise. So yeah, totally right. Trying to find the balance between the two.
And yeah. So I did a little bit of Taekwondo when I was very young. So awesome. I have some experience in this, not a lot, but a little bit. And I'm thinking about how the discipline of physical practice, and once again, kind of going back to that, the discipline of the mind, and how those two come together as well when we start to practice these physical things in our life. Like they overlap each other, or they enable you to, you know, as you practice this physical discipline, you're able to practice this mental discipline. I don't know if you've had that experience or that you see that with your clients as they're using these tools.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Especially when it comes to like core beliefs, those, the stinking thinking, the automatic thoughts. Yeah.
Right. Being able to like go, wait a minute, I need to do this move, not that move.
Yes. I need to look maybe at this direction with this perspective. That's going to benefit me a lot more. That's not self-defeating as much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So tell me a little bit more about some of the techniques you use or some of the metaphors that you've put into this work.
The first belt move in the book. So the belt move, the moves in the book, the techniques in the book, so to speak, for recovery. And also it could be used for mental health as well, some overlapping, is what's called thundering uncertainty. So I go from white belt to black belt metaphorically in the book with different techniques. And so where is someone often at when they're starting something new? I'm hugely uncertain about how this journey is going to go. And so that, so thundering hammers is the Kempo move, which is a defense against a step through right punch. And thundering uncertainty is what it's translated to. And so I talk about uncertainty in a portion of the techniques.
Describe that a little bit. Like, I know we're like on an audio podcast, so it's hard to see it visually, but tell me a little bit about how you do that. And I want to put the connection together of how that moves us emotionally, how we apply that to our emotional life. Because that is, at the beginning, it is complete uncertainty. It's... You know, it's like you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you can do it. Yeah. You don't know if you've got the ability to do it. And it's terrifying.
It sure is. It's super terrifying. I don't know how this is going to go. Part of what I talk about is it's okay to be uncertain. When I hear someone speaking about uncertainty, I actually light up because there's so much vulnerability in speaking about that uncertainty. And there's that connection that can be made when I reach out to someone and want to talk about, hey, I don't know how this is going to go. I have no way of knowing. Yet, you know what? I don't mind talking with you about this and being able to find that connection. We talk about the opposite of addiction often being connection or addiction equaling disconnection. And so that can help on my journey. And the uncertainty might come up here and there throughout the journey. And it's just being able to meet that uncertainty emotionally and mentally, spiritually, even physically.
And I imagine too that you get to practice. Like when you go into the dojo and you're doing this, you're practicing, you're preparing yourself for that uncertainty. I'm sure even though you prepare yourself with these techniques, when someone throws that punch, it always doesn't work exactly as you practice it. You've got to be ready. You've got to be able to be flexible. You've got to be able to be prepared for that.
That's right, Dwayne. Yeah. And there's times sparring where I did not know what was going to happen either on the offense or defense. Like I went in once on my sensei sparring. He did a leg sweep on me. The next thing I knew, I was looking at the ceiling, you know, totally uncertain. I actually had to fight him for my black belt without any gear. Obviously, he held back. He's like 6'2", you know, ex-Marine, if there is such a thing. And yeah, I was totally uncertain how that was going to go. Yet I persevered. I survived, you know.
So, right. But yeah. You took all the strength that you knew to be able to take on that moment. And I would imagine, you know, that experience then translates to your own life. Like you said, that courage, because you face this difficult situation in training. It gives you the wherewithal to face those difficult situations in your life outside of the gym, outside of the dojo.
Yes. 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 It does translate over. Absolutely. When it comes to confidence, when it comes to self-respect for myself and others, when it comes to the discipline piece we were speaking about, being able to be okay with that uncertainty. It's hard to maybe understand this technique and the form and the stances and the different moves embedded in the technique. Same thing with outside. When it comes to relationships and how a relationship's going to go or whatever it may be.
And you also talk about addiction being viewed as like your opponent, something you're sparring with. Can you talk about that and how these two things come together in that viewpoint?
Sure. Yeah. So I see four weapons when it comes to that opponent, addiction, the metaphor. People, places, things are often the ones people know about in treatment centers, and in the rooms of like AA. I add the fourth one being ideas and how ideas, if they're not beneficial to me, can come in, whether that be self-doubt, self-sabotage, whatever. And so that's how I see the opponent, the adversary addiction operating is through these different weapons, so to speak. And that I have to watch out for those as far as triggers, whether it's certain people in my life, maybe it's places and the environment, the ideas, or different things. Playgrounds, playmates, playthings. Yeah.
Right. And Can you use that? I guess what I'm thinking about is when you view addiction as an opponent, that's something you can be strategic about.
Yes, exactly.
You can, like you were saying earlier, train for it.
Yes, exactly. I can know in my environment, I can train it for that opponent in my environment before the opponent starts to amp up or starts to approach, so to speak. And that comes with awareness, that comes with action, comes with knowledge about that opponent as well. Again, those four weapons, especially the ideas that could be embedded in my head from either society, other people, internally. Yes, so there is ways of learning and knowing and taking action before, or if there is a trigger, so to speak, I know what to do. Yeah.
Right. And you talked about thundering hammers, thundering uncertainty. But you also have other ones like the five swords, the five affirmations, courting the tiger, courting the curiosity. I want to talk about some of those. Like, tell me about the five swords and the five affirmations.
Yeah. So the five swords is a Kenpo martial arts technique. I won't display it here. I might hit the mic, but it's five swords embedded in the technique. Those are five strikes. And so what I did is I translated that move to five different parts to look at for someone in recovery, but they can also be used for somebody pursuing increased, you know, better mental health for them. So that's self-love, vitality. That's the first one. And then there's emotional flexibility. And then there's problem-solving agility. And then spirituality pursuer and resilience gainer. And those are the five swords.
And those are things that you can practice, like we were talking about earlier, like the being strategic, like you go into the dojo to practice for life or for the battle that may come, may or may not come, but you're practicing. What about courting the tiger and courting the curiosity?
Yeah, that is in the white belt section of the different techniques, if you will, in the book. And that's about being curious. Even if I have a relapse, so to speak, whether it's through a harm reduction approach or absence-based approach, can I get curious about what happened? Can I not beat myself up as much and just learn from that? Can I get curious about learning from others? Can I get curious about my feelings and what I'm thinking, my sensations in my body? Can I get curious about my environment and the different resources out there? And so that's the courting the curiosity. And that often comes after we've worked through some of that uncertainty. It's hard to be curious when I'm uncertain because I'm really focused on the uncertainty. So at least that's my perspective. I could be off.
Yeah. Yeah. As people do this work, what do you start to see happen to them? And how do they start to progress through it?
I see them getting more curious. I see them not beating themselves up as much for any type of mishaps. I see them coming more into themselves with that self-love vitality, as I mentioned. It doesn't mean that they put other people out to pasture. They're finding the balance between themselves and other people. And I have to quote Alan Berger for that, one of his books, 12 Stupid Things That Mess Up Recovery. So that's what I see, that they're able to find the empowerment within themselves to continue on with curiosity, with that uncertainty, with moving through this journey in a way where I can look at both what I consider, if I have to label it good or bad, maybe I come to a place where I don't have to label it as much anymore. It just is.
It just allows it. Just allow it to be as it is, and it's just there. Yeah. I mean, I'm imagining, you know, with this metaphor, the thought of being, you know, training and getting to that calm space where your adversary, if it's addiction, life, whatever shows up, that you can be in a space to flow with that.
Yes.
Go with it.
Yeah. Yes.
But be prepared for it too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can flow with it. I can learn from the experiences. Yeah. And whatever comes up, I'll be able to persevere.
Yeah. Yeah. And in a lot of these disciplines, these martial arts, there's a lot of spirituality in it. It's it's bigger than just the fight itself. There's a spiritual component. How do those start to mix in together?
I believe that meaning and purpose is a huge part of that when it comes to the spirituality. When I'm able to not be so entrenched in that self-sabotage of addiction, or even if it's like depression or whatever it is that's a barrier to me, what comes up out of that is meaning and purpose and how I can maybe approach others with my testimony, my story, how I can give back.
That's good. What are some of the things that come up that might surprise people or that they're not prepared for in this, or that maybe send them sideways?
I believe that co-occurring concerns can send someone sideways. the prevalence of those when it comes to addiction, or if it's mainly just not just, but if it's not addiction, but a mental health concern like post-traumatic stress, how prevalent that can be, how pervasive that can be, and how much shame can be attached to all the different ones, whether it's anxiety, depression, trauma, addiction. I believe the impact of shame is probably one of the biggest pieces for someone.
Can you talk more about that and the role of shame? Because I think that shame is probably what drives most of addiction in the first place, at the very undercurrent of it, is that shame-bound self, or the shame that comes from the struggle itself, and really keeps people in a very isolated space.
Yeah, totally. I think that isolation is a huge part of this, Dwayne, like you mentioned, that isolated space. Shame has been known as spiritual suicide. And what that means is I start to be cut off from myself, other people in my life, and my relationship with something bigger than me, a higher power, higher consciousness, whatever that is. And so I do feel that's a big part, is isolation, being cut off that way, especially from spirituality, not really feeling like I'm worthy to get the care and support that I need. And a lot of times depression can mimic shame, and shame can mimic depression. Sometimes people feel depressed, but actually it's an overwhelming amount of shame.
Yeah. And maybe not even having awareness of that. Like you said, we can be disconnected from the shame in a way to protect ourselves that ends up keeping us separated from others when we need that support. Mm-hmm. I'm also thinking about how the practice of this, or bringing in this, not just as a metaphor, but in the physical space, helps increase self-worth and self-value if you're practicing these physical things. So they help in multiple ways. I mean, they influence each other. You can practice these spiritual, emotional metaphors, but then you're also practicing it in the physical world with your body and how those things come together.
Yeah, totally. Like, I'm able to gain more confidence in practicing this technique, you know, when it comes to sparring or whatever it is. I have a better form when it comes to techniques. I have a better balance. And with that comes an increase in confidence and self-assurance and self-regard within myself. And that can be seen in life too. The more I practice these different parts, whether it's self-love or self-compassion or the curiosity, all those different parts, just reaching out to people, the easier it becomes and the more I feel like I'm within myself.
Yeah. And you were talking about yourself earlier being passive and really having to learn to be assertive and move yourself out. So I imagine this, practicing this, kind of forced you to do that.
I'm a very introverted guy, Dwayne. And so it definitely forced me, for sure. Even going to tournaments, it was very, very tough for me. I mean, I had so much anxiety doing these tournaments because, yeah, just how introverted I am. And for a while, I was a closet introvert. I showed extroversion, but really, I'm very introverted. I've come to that place now over the course of time.
Wow. So you had to learn to balance those two things out. And so I'd imagine, I mean, what is it like to go to a tournament and have to spar somebody, you know? And I imagine it's kind of like, if it's not, you know, for some people, I guess it's in their wheelhouse, right? They're like, they really are thrilled to be there and excited to be there. But here you are, like, I'm here because I want to be here, but I'm terrified of being here.
That's right. That's right. It's a little bit of both sides of the coin. And yeah, I enjoy being there at the same time. Goodness, this is so difficult to be seen by all these people, or have to perform what's called a kata, which is like a choreographed martial arts routine with punches, kicks, blocks, all that, and have to be eyes on.
Right. You have to be seen. Yeah. I mean, so they're doing that, I would imagine, and being able to accomplish it and facing that allows you to face a lot of other things, to do other things in your life that are meaningful.
Yes. Yes, it does help. Does help. It builds that character, builds that strength, builds that perseverance. I remember when I was playing basketball once, I don't know what was happening, but I was tearing up. I was shedding some tears. I must have been around maybe 10 or so. My coach told me, I remember him telling me this, Eric, I know you're very tenderhearted. I can see that. And that it's always stuck with me. How can I make that or look at that as a strength instead of a weakness? You know?
Right. Be able to turn that around into something that is actually purposeful in your work now. I mean, that's to be a counselor, a therapist, a mental health professional. You need a certain level of sensitivity to be able to meet your clients and help them. They need that from you.
Yeah.
And being able to turn that into an asset and learning that. I'm just going back to the metaphor of martial arts now as well, because in a lot of these things, it's about redirection. I'm imagining, you know, maybe that's from the movies. I don't know. But, you know, it's about redirection and being able to see what's going to happen and turn the energy back on the opponent.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm right. You have to correct me if I'm wrong.
No, yeah. Yeah, you're totally on point, Dwayne. Like the redirection of maybe someone's body weight, you know, for my advantage when it comes to martial arts, when I'm in an attack. It could be the redirection of the energy of that addiction, you know. So I'm redirecting when it comes to a craving. I'm redirecting that craving's energy. I'm doing something that's beneficial for me with that energy. Yeah, so you're totally on point.
It's like, it's the power of metaphor, how strong that can be when we can harness the metaphor that works for us. Like you said, taking what you've done and taking your experience of martial arts and being able to take that metaphor into the emotional and spiritual realm and use that metaphor to be able to help yourself and help other people, because I think some people out there can resonate with that metaphor. It's something easy that they can understand, they can grasp onto, and actually put it to use, which is powerful when we start to see it. Like when we get the metaphor that works for us, it's like, oh, I can do this.
Yeah, I can do this. Eh? Like it doesn't have to be complex, that metaphor. There's power in that simplicity.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we can conceptualize it in a way that works with our own brain and our own thinking in a way that now we can make change, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how we come to change, is through the different experiences that we have and not filtering out those difficult experiences. I know you mentioned the five affirmations, and that is that's actually a technique of five swords with the 66 techniques that are in the book. So that's just being able to create five affirmations for me. Simple affirmations, going back to the simplicity, that can help me.
That's awesome. I'm glad that you put this all into a book for people, because I know there's a lot of people out there who can relate to this metaphor. And once they hear it, they can take it and use it for themselves and be able to do it. So tell me a little bit about the book and putting it in pen to paper and writing this down and the motivation to do that.
Oh, it was a process for sure. Well, first there was a lot of self-doubt. I've never written a book. Can I write this book? Is this going to work out? So I had to deal with that first. And then I started to, you know, a lot of ideas came to me in the bathtub, as fun as that sounds, right? Like, oh yeah, right. I could, you know, a lot of meditation there. And so what I started to do was go through this. I was given permission by a gentleman that wrote this really amazing manual for all the different belts for American Kenpo in Kentucky. So I had to get permission. If it was not for his permission, I would not have been able to do the book, because there's so much content that I was able to reference. And so there's that. But yeah, it was just really going through all these different techniques and looking at, okay, from my experience, I know that these different concepts, whether it's conquering shields being translated to conquering love, or the first yellow belt move is delayed sword, delayed gratification. I'm finding these different concepts that I know about, and I'm starting to translate these American Kenpo techniques to recovery-based techniques. And so I really had to rack my brain, Dwayne, and see, okay, which ones are the most applicable, which ones make the most sense to start out with the white belt. The last move actually is called the denial breaker. We think denial often happens at the beginning, but it can continue to happen for a lot of folks in different ways. So the backbreaker translates to the denial breaker as a move. So that took some time. The 98 different concepts that are in the book, that took a lot of time because, I mean, they are martial arts concepts, but I had to see if it made sense for them to be translated to a recovery-based technique. And if it didn't make sense, it was not going to be used. And so it just, just looking at the metaphor piece, I'm a very visual person, very metaphorical. And so it was just writing down notes, researching these different texts of martial arts that I was graciously being able to.
And I have a question. How did you use these techniques to get through that process? Right. Because here you are writing these things. And, you know, like you said earlier, you had to conquer your own self-doubt. Is this even going to work? Is anybody going to want to read this or look at it or take it on? Or is what's going to happen? I have to deal with all of my stuff just to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that still creeps up here and there. You know, the book's going to be published hopefully a little over a month. And I'm wondering, is this going to work? Are people going to like it? But I have to realize it is what it's going to be, and it is going to be as the best as I can make it, and that's okay. So absolutely, like the uncertainty part, absolutely. Or
all of that.
There's even breaking doubt as a technique in the book. So I constantly am breaking the doubt.
And just going, I love that. I love that metaphor too, because it gives you something, like for me, the way my brain works, it gives me something to physically be able to do in my brain. I don't know if that makes sense, but I can picture it. And then it helps me to go, that's what I'm doing in this moment. I'm going to break the doubt and then move through it. Yes. Because anytime you want to create something new, you're taking a risk.
Oh, yeah.
We risk when we put new stuff out into the world. Absolutely. And we don't know how it's going to turn out. And it's scary.
And it's so scary. You know,
and we have to break our doubt and do it. Otherwise the world doesn't get it. And it's important stuff.
I have to remember that if I don't break that doubt, the world won't receive what I'm able to bestow. And that is a really good reminder, Dwayne. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's hard. It's part of this process. Well, Eric, I loved talking to you. One question before you go, I like to ask every guest, you've probably heard it, but it's if you can say one thing to someone out there, maybe they're struggling, maybe they're at the beginning of the white belt of this journey, and you want to tell them one thing, what's the thing you're going to say?
I was waiting for this, Dwayne. I would say, you know, everybody has value, but not everyone adds value to my life. However, I would like people to know out there, if you're at this journey, the beginning, so to speak, white belt, so to speak, you have value. You have value.
Awesome. I love it. I love it. I love giving that. Title of your book, put it out there. Where can people find it?
The Martial Art of Recovery, How to Subdue Addiction and Achieve Mental Wellness. And it will be out around May 14th on Amazon, possibly Ingram Spark. We'll see, but likely on Amazon for sure.
Awesome. That's great. I will put all the links in the show notes when this episode comes out. So you guys can get that at theaddictedmind.com. So check it out there. Thank you, Eric, for coming on, just sharing your wisdom and breaking the doubt and putting your material out into the world.
A pleasure, Dwayne. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. As usual, all the links will be in the show notes at theaddictedmind.com. And once again, if you are getting a lot out of The Addicted Mind, please rate and review us in whatever podcast app you're using. This is a recent review we got from Courtney. Amazingly positive and powerful podcast. My boyfriend and I are recovering addicts, and we love listening to this podcast. I especially love the Addicted Mind Plus ones. They're short and easy to squeeze in with my cup of coffee in the morning, and they offer helpful tools to apply to my everyday life. Courtney, we are so excited that you're getting so much out of the Addictive Mind Plus. Awesome. So great to hear. Thank you for taking the time to do that. I really appreciate it. All right, everyone, have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you on the next episode.
Oh, hey, it's Erin.
And I'm Michaela, and we're the hosts of the Two Sober Girls podcast, and we are on a mission to spill the wild truth about sobriety.
Forget the rosé all day cliche. Sobriety is flipping amazing.
Absolutely. It's not just about quitting the drink. It's a gift you give yourself and your loved ones.
So what are you waiting for? Break up with that old toxic relationship with alcohol and let us show you the possibilities.
And here's the thing. Everything your precious heart desires becomes way easier without the influence of alcohol.
We're not just two sober girls. We're also wellness coaches. We're here to show you how to optimize health, lifestyle, and beauty, feel sexy and alive as F.
So stay tuned because we're rolling out new episodes every Monday wherever you get your podcasts. And trust us, they have your name written all over them. We can't wait to share the magic of sobriety and wellness with you. Subscribe to Two Sober Girls podcast today and come follow us on Instagram for behind the scenes action and send us a DM. We can't wait to meet you.